Welcome to session 117 of the Bible in a Year commentary. If you started the series on the 1st of January, then today should be the 27th of April. Today we'll be looking at Isaiah 36 to 38 and Psalm 117. But so far in Isaiah, we've read through the section focused on the judgment and future hope of Jerusalem and the section focused on the judgment and future hope of the nations. Then we started the section focusing on the accusations against Israel's leaders. Through these different preaches and visions, we gathered a series of images. We saw Isaiah in God's courtroom, purified to be in God's presence, and then commissioned to be a warning to the people that they would ultimately ignore. God was about to pour judgment on the Israelites for their wickedness and corruption. This punishment was described like God taking an axe to a tree and just a stump remaining. It was destruction intended to purge and purify. Out of the remnant of his people, this tree stump, God would raise up a branch from the line of David, who would be king who reigned over the earth and brought peace. Isaiah mentioned a future son who would be born and who would come after the period of judgment. He would be king over God's people, bring peace to the world, and restore all nations under his rule. Focusing on the foreign nations, we got a mention of a day of the Lord. On this day, God will bring judgment, waging war on evil and wickedness. He will destroy powers that set themselves up against him, whether they be human kings or spiritual beings. These foreign nations are judged for their pride, oppression, and wickedness. Isaiah specifically mentions Babylon, Assyria, Philistia, Moab, Cush, also known as Ethiopia, Egypt, and Tyre. Focusing on Israel's leaders, Isaiah pointed out that the judicial leaders, the priests, and even some of those who claimed to be prophets were proud drunkards who put their trust in their own power and authority rather than God. And they ignored God's principles and teachings while paying him lip service. These leaders have repeatedly put their trust in foreign nations like Egypt to save them, rather than putting their trust in God. But through these preaches, Isaiah highlights some key ideas. The Israelites are not to turn to these foreign nations for support and protection. God is in control, and we use all of this for his purposes. Eventually, even these foreign nations will be brought into God's future kingdom. In that time, all people will celebrate, feast, and worship God, led by a king who will bring peace and flourishing. We've read about Isaiah challenging the things that the people have put their trust in and encouraging them to put their trust in God. The book then narrows in on the same message for King Hezekiah. We first read about Hezekiah in 2 Kings 18 to 20, and much of today's reading will seem very similar to that. While Hezekiah was king, the Assyrians sent the army to conquer Judah and attack Jerusalem. The commander of the army comes out and gives a speech to Jerusalem, attacking the things they put their trust in. This is similar to the messages that Isaiah has been telling Jerusalem. He points out that Egypt cannot save them, and that God is in control because he's the one that has sent them. The leaders that had come to speak to the commander ask if he could speak in Aramaic, the language of the Assyrians, so that no one in the city would be able to understand what they were talking about. And the commander then defiantly shouts out to those in the city, this time attacking their trust in their own king, Hezekiah. But then this is where the commander makes his mistake. Until now, he has been like Isaiah, challenging the false places that the people have put their trust. But next, he invites the people to put their trust in him and in Assyria so that everything will be okay. He then ends with mocking the God of the Israelites, saying that none of the gods of the other nations have saved them, so why would their God save them? Rather than pointing the Israelites back to God, this commander has insulted God, and it won't end well for him. And the leaders of Jerusalem went back into the city and told Hezekiah everything that had happened, and they mourned together. Then Hezekiah calls for Isaiah's help. Isaiah prophesies that these Assyrians will not be successful and that God will convince them to leave by sending threats of another nation attacking them. The commander goes back to report to the king of Assyria and finds out that another nation will attack soon. He panics and so sends another message to Jerusalem to get the city to surrender quickly, as he would not be fighting a war on two fronts. In that message, he insults God again, telling the people to not put their trust in him because he will not save them. Receiving this letter, Hezekiah does the right thing. He puts his trust in God. He lays out the situation before God and declares God's power and authority as Lord of hosts and kings over all the earth. He recognizes that the situation is bad and that the Assyrians have defeated many other nations. But he points out that the gods of those nations were fake gods, unlike their god. And so he asks God to save them. God responds with a challenge to the king of Assyria. He calls out the king for his pride and for mocking him, the God of Israel. God declares that he is the one with authority. He is the one who allowed Assyria to defeat those other nations, and he knows everything about the king. So like a man leading a horse, God will lead the king of Assyria away from Jerusalem and back home. Then God turns to Hezekiah and speaks of prosperity and protection over the nation. These raids from the Assyrians have destroyed the harvest, but God declares that for this year and next, the people will find enough food, and by the third year, their harvest will be back to full strength. He then declares that the Assyrians will not step foot into the city, and that's exactly what happened. An angel of the Lord comes and kills 185,000 men, causing the Assyrians to flee back home. When he arrives at home, the commander of the army is killed by his own sons as punishment for mocking God. Because Hezekiah put his trust in God, their enemies were defeated. The focus moves from a national situation to a personal one. Hezekiah becomes deathly ill, and Isaiah comes to him to put his house in order because he will die. But Hezekiah once again puts his trust in God for his own life, and God responds by allowing him to live another 15 years. We then get a psalm from Hezekiah that recognises how serious this situation was, that declares his trust in God, and then praises God for saving him. We see in Hezekiah the example the people should be following in trusting in God, not in foreign nations or personal powers for protection. But that's Isaiah 36 to 38. Now let's jump in with Psalm 117. This psalm isn't attributed to anyone in particular and falls into the category of praise psalm. Not only that, but it wins the award for the shortest psalm at just 2 verses. It's a simple call and declaration. All nations are to praise the Lord because he is loving and faithful and will be so forever. And these are ideas that we've seen many times before in the Psalms. The ultimate goal is for all nations to come and praise the Lord, not just the Israelites. One day, they too will experience the same love and faithfulness that the Israelites have been called to experience.